Inside Lacrosse Podcast.
Thanks for stopping by the Inside Lacrosse Podcast. I am Terry Foy, joined today by Michigan head coach John Paul. Fresh off the Wolverines' first season, Team 1 is in the books. Coach Paul, thank you very much for joining us on the podcast.
Great to be here as always, Terry. Thank you.
So, obviously, a 1-12 record wasn't necessarily the way that you wanted things to unfold in terms of a wins-loss perspective. That being said, you know, we have spoken a fair number of times prior to the start of the season, and one of the lessons that you tried to communicate, I think not just to me, but also to your players and probably to your fans as well, was that this year was about building culture, and I think that that's probably a good first place to start. When you look at what your team kind of did, how you came together, what are your thoughts on the culture that was laid in by Team 1?
Well, you gave us a mulligan there. We were actually 1-13, but we didn't go into this season, as you just said, thinking so much about wins and losses, and our goals had mostly to do with culture. And certainly we had game goals and we wanted to win more games, but we knew that at the end of the year we would have to look back and measure our success based on if we really took some strides towards developing the elite Division I culture that we want to have here. And I know we did. We had a lot of challenges. We had leaders who were not only learning to lead, as your leaders always are learning at this level of lacrosse, but were learning to lead in a significantly new set of circumstances than they had ever been part of before. And a team that, you know, didn't sign up for this. And they were all pretty happy to get it, but then, you know, once you get into it and see what that really means and what the requirements really are, and having to do that through a losing season, you know, there are a lot of challenges there, and credit to our leaders and our seniors. They got us through the season moving forward every day, and we are a much better culture now than we were a year ago, no question.
One of the moments or points in the season that I want to focus on was early March. You're on the road, play Jacksonville. Looks like, the program's first win is within the grasp, and you lose a one-goal game in overtime. But then you turn around 2 days later and take care of business against Mercer, and you do get the one-goal win. The program's first win. When you look at that, as an outsider, I think that it's easy to imagine a team being that close to such a kind of significant achievement, falling short, and being so frustrated that you might not necessarily turn around. Can you talk about that 2-day window or 3-day window from a coach's perspective about how you saw your team move forward and kind of go from narrowly missing the program's first win to finally, accomplishing that goal?
Well, putting it into context too, that was the end of our spring break, and we spent the beginning of that spring break trip out in Denver, where we had two blowout losses, one to Denver and then one to Air Force. And we were pretty disappointed with the way we played out there. We definitely did not feel like we were getting it yet. We felt like, you know, we were being reminded daily how far we still had to come. So we ended up having a great week of practice in Florida. And, the guys stayed focused despite our surroundings, despite the fact that we were in Florida in February. And that showed in our game against Jacksonville. And that, you're right, that was the first point. We had our ups and downs the rest of the year, but that was our first point where the guys really started to understand what it takes to compete at this level. And I'll tell you, it was also a point where our coaching staff started to get the message across and formulate our own message about how we were going to have to play the game to be competitive right now at this level. And that, you know, it's a process of the guys understanding that, us understanding it, and all of us getting on the same page and executing it. And that was the first time that we really started to.
And then quickly to turn around and play your first game on campus as a varsity team, you played Loyola and Oosterbaan, correct?
Yeah, we did, yeah.
And how was that? What was that experience like? What was it like kind of, leading the team as a varsity team on the field for their first, first on-campus game?
Surreal. I mean, we've been playing in Oosterbaan for 20-some years, and that's been, we only played one game there this year, but it's been our home for a long, long time. And to see, they changed it pretty dramatically for this season, just to upgrade it and make it look more like a Division I facility. But to be lining up there and playing Loyola, who, we saw the potential in that team then, was just a surreal feeling, because it's so much the same, so much of what we've been doing for the last 23 years, but then doing it against, you know, a top five program in Division One was surreal. And that was another stage in our evolution. You know, we got back late Sunday night and had a day off Monday and had a day to prepare for Loyola, and had not a great first half and played an outstanding second half against them. And it was another great step forward for us.
Moving along on the schedule, the next point I wanted to hit on was when you guys went out to Boston to play Harvard. You know, it was an enormous turnout, but one of the things that was communicated to me was how significant the Michigan fan base was in the stadium. When you traveled, what was it like? What was the following like on the road, and how significant is that to what you think the identity of this program will ultimately become?
Certainly one of the many reasons that we added lacrosse here at Michigan was because it gave us an opportunity to bring a Michigan team to the East Coast. We have such a following on the East Coast. A significant portion of our alums live along the Eastern Seaboard, and not lacrosse alums, I mean just Michigan alums. And they come out to support Michigan. And that Harvard game was the first time that we really saw it. We had more fans in the stands than they did. You know, they were loud, they were singing the victors, they were doing Michigan chants that we get back home, and they made an impression and they helped us. And, you know, I think we're going to continue to see that. We saw it again at Rutgers a couple weeks later. And we're going to continue to see that. And I'm excited to take the team East. I'm excited to bring the team to our fans in the East. And, I think that is one of the ways that Michigan make an impact in the lacrosse world, because we are going to travel so well.
And then finally, the last thing I wanted to hit on, obviously probably the most significant thing that the neutral lacrosse fan turned to when the announcement came down that Michigan was going to be a varsity team, that being the Ohio State-Michigan rivalry taking its part in the world of men's lacrosse at the Division I level. And you hosted the Buckeyes this year on the Big Ten Network before the football, or was it after the spring football game?
We played right after the spring game. That's right.
So, you know, competitive, hard-fought game. Ultimately, didn't come out on top, losing 12-9. That being said, like I said, national TV in the Big House after the spring football game. What were your thoughts on that day?
You know, great day for Michigan lacrosse. I think a great day for Ohio State lacrosse too. To be able to start that rivalry, which means so much to both of us, and I hope a great day for lacrosse in general. You know, it's just special, and it's neat because both programs really embrace the traditions of the school. We both wear helmets that are, you know, look like our football helmets. We both, you know, embrace a lot of the history and tradition of our football programs, and it was a great opportunity for us to start introducing Michigan fans who aren't necessarily lacrosse fans to the sport. And, you know, what a better way to do it than a Michigan-Ohio State rivalry. And I think that's just going to continue to grow here. So a great start to it. I mean, we wanted to win, but we get to play that game again here next year, as the ECAC just came out with a scheduling template that says that Ohio State has to be up here again next year. I think they're having construction of the horseshoe next year anyway. So, you know, we'll get to turn around and run that right back, and hopefully we'll just continue developing this rivalry.
Well, I want to get into this team a little bit, because it's certainly not to be lost that, you know, a largely or almost exclusively club roster playing at the Division I varsity level is a story that probably, you know, maybe never be duplicated. But first I wanted to get your thoughts, particularly as we are elbow deep in NCAA tournament. You know, you guys played a few tournament teams this season. A few of them have already had their seasons cut short. But, you know, between Denver, Loyola, North Carolina, and then a couple other teams that were just on the outside of the bubble, obviously Penn State being the most dramatic of those, what are your thoughts as a coach making the transition from having been a club coach very recently to now being prepared for, you know, some of the best lacrosse teams in the world? What are your thoughts on, surveying the landscape of Division I college lacrosse and you know, how things shake out, and you know, not necessarily even where Michigan fits in just yet, just what were your thoughts on what you took away from playing these programs?
Well, I'll tell you a couple things. One, and we there wasn't that much that surprised us, but, you know, you need to be ready every single week, and that's the biggest difference between what we were doing before and Division I lacrosse. It is unbelievably competitive, and certainly the top programs are a step above for a number of reasons, but nobody's safe from week to week. You have to be mentally and physically prepared to compete. You have to compete for an entire game. And I think we all took those lessons away from this season, and I'm glad we had the opportunity to do that. You know, two, recruiting is critical, and it's something that we've been pouring a lot of energy into here. We know we have to build up our talent base, and that'll come. You know, we're happy with how it's going. It's going to continue to improve. And as much as we took our lumps this year, we know we're going to get there. But, you know, recruiting isn't the only thing. And I think that's the other thing you take away from it. You have to have the right culture. You have to have the right pieces in place to be able to compete week in, week out with what you have. And that's what we were mostly working on this year. And hopefully we can integrate the guys that we're recruiting into the program into that culture that we're trying to build.
You mentioned earlier, you know, the ECAC, you guys will be a part of the fabric of that very interesting conference going forward right now. ECAC rematch in the NCAA quarterfinals. You play Loyola, you play Denver, and then certainly Ohio State, we already talked about. From an on-field perspective and kind of generating a team identity, being in Baltimore, being a Loyola alum, have paid special attention to that team in terms of, you know, the thing that I've said about them a number of times. They're a team that doesn't really have a whole lot of weaknesses, and that's probably their biggest strength. Denver, a dynamic, explosive scoring offense. That is, you know, those are two clear identities. What type of identity do you see Michigan taking as an on-field team moving forward?
I think if you asked a lot of the MCLA programs that played us over the years, they would tell you that we were a very disciplined team, a hardworking team, a team that played with a very blue-collar style. We've never been a really loose, run-and-gun, kind of let-things-happen team. But we've always been known for playing hard, and I think we developed that reputation this year as well. And if we can get to where I hope we can get, that's going to be our reputation. We're going to be a team that's going to be a tough-out no matter who we have on the field, because we're going to play hard and we're going to play smart, and that's really what we're going for.
When we talked at the beginning of the season, one of the things that was difficult to quantify was exactly about how a lot of the players that you relied on over the last three or four seasons were going to make the transition to the varsity game. Started with Trevor Yealy. He was the leader, fifth-year senior, an offensive player, your goal scorer. Puts up 26 goals against a varsity schedule, and, you know, as far as I can tell, finished the season as your leading scorer. Can you talk about Trevor and how this season kind of unfolded for him and how your team relied on him to be its kind of offensive catalyst?
Well, we relied on Trevor for almost everything. I mean, he's been a leader. He had to continue to be a leader. He had to be a leader through our most challenging year ever to try and lead. And that probably took away a little bit from what he could do personally. But he had to enable others to really reach their potential, or we weren't going to even come close to reaching ours. If we had leaned on him for everything offensively, you know, at this level especially, we would have been in trouble. And he really did a great job expanding his game. He did a great job refining his game under Coach Lattimore, who Judd does so much with technique, and a lot of the guys really had to change some of the things they were doing, and Trevor embraced that and worked very hard at it. And ultimately, you know, he still was a guy that every team we were playing had to be aware of and had to focus on, and he still had a successful season. So, you know, there's no question. I think he proved that he can play at this level.
And then outside of him, Thomas Paris and Will Steenland, you know, proved to be your two, you know, kind of second most valuable options, with Alex Vasilev also being, you know, another one of those dodging midfielders. What did you learn about, I guess, kind of offense at this level and what it takes to score goals? Because the reason I ask that is that so often for first, second-year programs that are trying to make their way in Division I, either, you know, scoring goals is their most difficult bugaboo, or oftentimes, and we've seen this time and time again, whether it was at Jacksonville or Detroit Mercy or whoever else, kind of bring in a Canadian and almost take care, let him handle the responsibility of putting the ball in the net and surround him with a roster that's able to take care of all the other details. What were your thoughts on I guess, getting over that hump of a first-year program being able to score goals?
Well, we were a little unique too, because we weren't winning faceoffs, and we really played a defensive faceoff style all year. It's the way we had to play it. We weren't pushing transition by design. And so I bet you could count on literally on one hand, maybe two, the number of fast breaks we had this year. We weren't really trying to create that. And so we had to depend on 6-on-6 offense to score. And in most of our games, we did score. Our problems were more the possession battle. We lost that every game, and defense. But we did figure out how to score. A lot of that credit again goes to Judd Lattimore for really getting these guys up to speed and using what we had the best way we could. You mentioned Thomas Paris and Willie Steenland, and we moved Paris to midfield this year. And we did not have a tackman on this team who could break down Division I long sticks. So we had to, as a lot of teams do, but we were forced to, we had to dodge short sticks and start our offense that way. A lot of teams were slow to slide to us, and that put a lot of pressure on those midfielders. And a lot of times that was directly on guys like Alex Vasilev, Tom Paris, Willie Steenland, Doug Bryant when he was healthy. And the games that we were successful offensively were the games that those guys were successful beating their shorties and creating offense.
You talk about facing off, and you know, Brian Griner was a guy that, you know, came back, was a leader, had you know, some health problems, I think, over the course of his career. But when I got an opportunity to see practice, I thought that, you know, he looked like a Division I player, and he ended up, you know, obviously taking the vast lion's share of your faceoffs and didn't put together a really healthy winning percentage. And as you said, you guys struggled with winning the possession battle, but the faceoff and the goalie are, you know, those are two hinge points where oftentimes they can determine a disproportionate amount of the way in which, you know, games kind of unfold. What did you learn about, I suppose, you know, preparing your team for both of those positions? And then also, you know, you mentioned recruiting earlier. What did you take away from your first Division I season in terms of how you're going to recruit those two positions in particular going forward?
I've always taken a lot of pride in the faceoff position. I personally coach that position, and it's, you know, we've developed some great face-off guys here before with Brecken Kolitz and David Reinhart and even some of the guys before them. And, you know, Brian, we hamstrung him a little bit this year because he, you know, we had to play a defensive style. We could not give up breaks. We were going to get killed if we were giving up breaks on the face-off. So we had him play a very defensive style, which kind of fit his style anyway. And, you know, we simply, as given the roster that we have, we're not as athletic as most of the teams that we played on the wings. And those are the two things that really combined to affect, you know, where we finished up with our face-off numbers. You know, we hope we're addressing that in our recruiting. We have Brad Lott coming in next year who, you know, we hope is going to be successful pretty quickly. We have, you know, we hope help coming behind him in the next couple of recruiting classes. And we're obviously, as we recruit Division I guys, we're going to upgrade our wings a little bit and get a little bit more athletic there. So, you know, I think those are spots that we're going to get better. And then you mentioned goalie. You know, we played the first four games this season. We had five goalies on the roster. Four of them broke thumbs and hands, a couple of them repeatedly. Three of them had surgeries during the season. And Emil Weiss, who ended up being our starter, who we were counting on being our starter all year, missed our first four games, came back, played the entire season hurt. Played with a cast under his glove, could never grip the stick with his right hand, and ended up having a pretty respectable year for a freshman without a great defense in front of him playing injured like he did. So, you know, again, with what we're doing recruiting and with Amo coming back, I think we're gonna be in a pretty good position there going forward. But there's no question those are two positions that, you know, right up the middle of the field, just like any sport, right up the middle of the field in baseball and what you're doing with your center in hockey and your goalie in hockey, they're critical for us and something we're going to be focused on.
So you mentioned, you know, obviously so much of this season was about building for the future. You mentioned recruiting, obviously. Now the summer months kick in, that's when things start to take over. You know, as a very, and as I know you to be, you know, a very meticulous but also a very good planner, what are some of the things that are on your checklist in terms of taking off, preparing for the future?
You know, we still have some organizational things that we're working on here at Michigan. I mean, we still don't have dedicated facilities. The things that we're going to do here are going to be, you know, kind of benchmark setting things. We are really excited about the future there. We're on the part of this coaches tour next year is about, you know, getting the message out and starting some of the major fundraising we need to do to put together the facilities that we want to put together here. Which again, I think are going to set the standard for what Division Lacrosse does. We want to build a fan base. Winning is part of that. Our marketing campaigns here and what we're doing with lacrosse is also a big part of it. And then on the field, we just want to keep developing and what we started this year. Our goal was to build an elite Division I culture. I don't think we got there, but we took some pretty major steps towards that. And the guys we have coming back next year, I think, have a much clearer picture of what that means and what it's really going to take. And I guess we'll get a pretty good indication when they come back in the fall of what they did over the summer and how they approach next year to see how much they really did get it.
And that'll certainly be one of the exciting things to keep an eye on. You know, one of the things that you and I discussed heading into the season was, part of building that roster on the basis of, making the transition from club to varsity. Well, it'll be interesting to see how, a first full class of guys knowing exactly what they're committing to as far as the season and its demands are concerned end up meshing with a group of guys who, when they made the decision to play college lacrosse, thought that they were going to be playing, club lacrosse. And as a staff, how do you guys approach that? How do you guys plan on trying to assimilate those two different mindsets?
So much of it, well, a lot of it's just being prepared. And, we've already started that. Our staff, and I mean our entire staff, not just our coaching staff, is working hard to have all the pieces in place over the course of the summer and then for the fall when those guys all get here. So much of it is going to hinge on our returning leadership, and that means everybody who's returning, incorporating those guys right away and making sure they understand. Because you say we have all these new guys coming in who know what it takes to be a Division I athlete, and the reality is they don't. The difference is these guys are coming in to learn that. They may think they know, but no freshman knows. And, it's going to be up to our returning guys to make them understand as quickly as possible what our expectations are, what flies and what doesn't fly here. And, the quicker they get it, the faster we're going to proceed.
One of the things that has changed since the last time you appeared on the Inside Lacrosse podcast, I believe two new programs have joined the fold, Boston University and Furman announcing that they are going to be adding men's Division I lacrosse. And then also, High Point and Marquette will be taking the field for the first time next year. If with those two new programs probably going to be naming coaches over the next couple weeks, and certainly John Torpy and Joe Amplo being about to lead their teams onto the field for the first time, if you have one piece of advice to give a coach, taking a first-year program onto the field at the D1 level, what piece of advice would that be?
Well, those guys are going to be – they have a head start on me because they have Division I coaching background. So I think, they're going to be in a much better position to know what to expect coming into this. Again, I think it's all about culture. It's all about culture. You're not going to come in and set the world on fire as a first-year program. You're going to have your struggles. You're going to face a lot of adversity. You're going to have a lot of challenges. And it's all about having the kind of team that they can come off a loss or they can come off a disappointing performance and stay enthusiastic, stay positive, and get right back to work. And that's not an easy thing to do. And as you're building a program, it's absolutely necessary. So I'm sure those guys are both great coaches. I talk to them both fairly regularly. I'm sure they're going to be prepared for that. I'm sure it's what they've been talking to their teams about this whole year as they've prepared for next year. And I'm excited to see what they can do. We have them both on our schedule next year.
Yeah, those will be awesome matchups for all involved. So, John Paul, that's all we had for you on the Inside Lacrosse podcast. Congratulations on completing the first year, Team 1, as it were, in the books. Thank you very much for joining us, and we hope to talk to you again soon.
You bet. Thanks, Terry.
Inside Lacrosse podcast.